Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Cole Tucker goes back to Phoenix and homers for the Pirates last night.
Cole Tucker with a fly ball to right field, going back is Jones, looking up and it's gone! Cole Tucker, the hometown kid, has homered to right field, his second in the big leagues, and they are going wild here for Cole Tucker in the Valley of the Sun.
Yeah, what a great moment to go home like that and to hit a home run like he did. That's awesome. That is a great moment for him.
What a start that kid's had too with the Pirates.
He's very, very good. I mean, it's like Michael Chavis and Cole Tucker have been the two. Now, what will happen is the next time through the league, this is going to determine the staying power of a Michael Chavis, the staying power of a Vlad Guerrero Jr., the staying power of a Cole Tucker. When you get to the second time through and they develop a book on you, if you're able to adjust on that book, you're going to have a long career. If you can adjust, Vlad Guerrero Jr., Fernando Tatis, right? Two fabulous prospects, Michael Chavis, Cole Tucker. Those four guys, if each one of them has the ability to adjust, all of them had a chance to be really good players, and in a couple of cases, maybe stars. Tatis and Guerrero have star quality. But it's all about the ability to adjust. It's like we always say about defensive coordinators in football. They'll play a couple of rounds of golf here and there, but for the most part, they're spending their time in the offseason breaking down everybody else, saying, okay, wait a minute. Okay, this is what he does. This is where he hurt us. How do we counter that? Well, guess what you now have to do as the player they're trying to counter? You have to have the ability to counter back. So the ones who have had longevity, Mike Trout, off to a great start, and then, the league adjusted to him. Well, you'd never know it because he adjusted right back, and he's the star of all stars. So that'll be the key for a guy like Tucker. How about the Chris Sale performance last night? Red Sox lost in extra innings. Sale struck out 17, and people were arguing that he had 17 strikeouts. He's three shy of the record that the Red Sox should have kept him in. He had thrown 108 pitches last night. Nobody had ever struck out 17 in seven innings. Well, he threw 108 pitches. And this goes back to what I've talked about. Remember I've talked about Pete Rose? Somebody said, well, he bet on the Reds to win. And I said, well, that's just as wrong, because you start then potentially misusing players because you need to win a game that night. My closer has pitched the last two games. I now need to win this game. I've got money tonight. So I bring him back out again, even though I was going to give him the night off. So my point has always been, you are not just managing the moment. You're not just managing the game. You are also managing the season. Sending him out last night to get a meaningless record, or the potential of a meaningless record, right, because you're going to need him in July, August, and September, is far more important than trying to chase after 20 strikeouts, which you might not get. You might not be. You'd have to strike out the side in the eighth inning to get the 20. I mean, the really good managers, and Alex Cora is a really good manager, they understand that you have to manage the moment, you have to manage the game, but you also have to manage the season. Last night, he handled all three of those really well in that situation with Chris Sale. There's no need to go after a record here. Now, if he'd thrown 90 pitches, yes. 108? No. Okay? We got other starts coming up. All right. Let's get to the Preakness coming up. There really isn't much left of the Derby field, including the Derby winner. And even the alleged Derby winner. They're not there either. But Steve Bornstein joins us from Fox 1340, who has always come on with us during the Triple Crown races. Steve-O, welcome back. Great to have you with us.
Good to be back. Happy to be here.
All right. You can't talk about the Preakness until I get a postmortem for you on the Kentucky Derby. What did you think of the ruling that took 11 times longer than the race?
What, was there an issue with the Kentucky Derby? I was unaware. No.
There might have been. I want to look at the tape.
There might have been a little controversy. First, I was right with the call. I thought the call was the right call. Yep. I think a lot of the social media backlash that came from it, A, came from people who are vastly unfamiliar with the rules of racing, and B, I think a lot of it also came from people who might have had a financial stake in the second choice on the tote board when the race went off. I made the argument that if it had been the 65-1 shot who caused the infraction, putting the 9-2 second choice in the tote board into the winner's circle, there wouldn't be that much anger about it. But because it went the other way, that was what created a lot of the backlash. And that's common. I mean, when a favorite loses a big sporting event, if it's a basketball game, a football game, there's always a sense of controversy or a sense of backlash from something like that. No different with the Derby. But the rules of racing are very simple. Luis Saez aboard Maximum Security does come out on the far turn, causing an infraction with War of Will, which caused a bit of a chain reaction, which caused Maximum Security to come down. It was the right call. I think a lot of the backlash also came from, and you mentioned it a moment ago, the amount of time that it took. And that had nothing to do with, oh, we're scared of making this. A lot to do with how far down the order of race do you have to put Maximum Security? Because you had to place him behind literally every horse that he impacted in that move, in making that move where he comes off the rail. So that's why it took so long. I think that's where the backlash comes from. It was the right call, though.
Also, Saez has been suspended for this. What did you think of the 15-day suspension?
15 days is a little harsh. I mean, most normal racing infractions are 5 days in the sport of horse racing.
Yep.
So 15 was a bit extreme. I understand because of the magnitude of the race, but if we're going to use that as the argument, then you can't use the argument that it should have taken 22 minutes if it's just like any other standard horse race. So it's a catch 22. I don't know if it should have been 15 days. I don't think the move was done maliciously. I don't think Saez intended to cause this massive, moment. I don't think that was the intent. I think the horse got a little bit spooked. I think Saez did create a little bit of the infraction there, but I think 15 days was a bit extreme.
All right, so Country House, the original plan for Bill Mott was not to run him in this race. I mean, right, that was not the plan. He didn't want to do that. Then the horse ended up winning the Kentucky Derby. He still decides not to run him. So you don't have Maximum Security. You don't have Country House either. So you have a wide open field where the favorite right now happens to be the Baffert horse, Improbable. What do you think about it? Because I think what that horse finished, fourth, fifth in the Derby?
He finished fifth.
Yeah, fifth in the Derby. What do you think of that horse and installing him as the favorite?
I understand him being the favorite for a number of reasons. Number one, it's Bob Baffert. His name is forever linked now to the Triple Crown. He's won multiple Triple Crown races. He's obviously, a major winner in these types of events. I'm not a fan, however, of this particular horse. You're looking at a horse who is still 0-3 this year. So, a fifth-place finish in the Derby, a second-place finish before that in the Arkansas Derby, a second-place finish in the Rebel Stakes earlier this year. I get all of his accomplishments as a two-year-old, but these are different. This is a different world now. So I'm tending to kind of stay against him a little bit this weekend as it relates to the Preakness. If he beats me, he beats me. But I also am aware that because of the connections here, because it's Bob Baffert, he's going to get overbet, and therefore I'd like to try him. As a gambler, simply as a gambling person, Harper's, I would try and beat him. And one thing you mentioned a moment ago about there's no triple crown on the line, I've maintained for years that in those instances when there is no triple crown on the line, usually it's for the Belmont. Usually the Preakness, right. the Derby winner runs back, the horse doesn't win the Preakness, and the Belmont becomes kind of an afterthought. And I've maintained for years that it is the job of a marketing person, it is the job of a promotional person, whether it be at a racetrack, a casino, or any event, that even if there is no triple crown on the line, it is still a very traditional, very important horse race. It is still an important event. A major sporting event doesn't lose its luster simply because there's not a championship on the line. So I'm hopeful that racing executives and marketing people and people who are in the business of promoting an event will understand that this is still a very important race, and in my mind, and I think in the gamblers' minds, a very intriguing wagering event.
Well, forever you're going to be known as the Preakness champion. Forever. So, I mean, that's huge.
Right. And that should be huge. That should be a big deal.
And it is a big deal to me, and I know it is to you. I want to ask you about one that would be in the middle of the odds, Bourbon War. What do you think of Bourbon War?
Bourbon War is interesting. Bourbon War was off the board last out in the Florida Derby, but of course the winner of that race was Maximum Security, who of course went on to win the Kentucky Derby. He's going to have to come from off the pace, but I think that style is going to work out well. There's a couple of speed horses in this race. I've always been a fan of trainer Mark Hennig. I grew up watching Mark Hennig trade horses years ago. He had a horse called Brocco, who was owned by the Broccoli family of James Bond fame. So Bourbon War is an interesting horse. Again, a horse who's winless this year, so you have the improbable angle working there. But unlike Improbable, who's going to be a short price, you're going to get some value on Bourbon War. I thought his win earlier this year in a little optional naming event was a good race. I don't think he needs to be, he doesn't need to be Maximum Security this time. He needs to be the field of horses who still have quite a bit to prove of themselves. So Bourbon War is an interesting horse. Maybe not as a win candidate, but certainly I'll be one that would include him in my exactas and tries and superfectas.
The Broccoli people should have named that horse Shaken Not Stirred.
See? There you go. Well done.
All right. So how do you want to play this on Saturday? What jumps to you in terms of somebody wants to put down their money just to win, but then how do you want to play it when you box it?
Well, we mentioned horses that haven't won races. How about a horse who's coming into the race with five consecutive victories, six consecutive victories?
Yep.
And that's always Mining, who comes in. Trevor Kelly Rubley, this is a horse who has won six straight races, all of them just 30 miles away over at Laurel Park outside Baltimore. A horse is coming in excellent form right now. Should be on top of the pace here, and if the pace doesn't stop, then I think Always Mining is a horse you want to pay attention to. He's definitely one I would use. The horse that ran seventh in the Kentucky Derby was moved up to seventh is War of Will, and I think when you look at what he was able to do, he's the one who got all the bumping. He's the one who took the worst of it, and he was in a position where he was going to have the lead had he not got cut off by Maximum Security. So I look at those two horses. I think you're going to get some value on War of Will. You're not going to get 16-1 like you would have gotten on him in the Kentucky Derby, but I think he's going to get overlooked simply because of what happened here. So I'm looking at War of Will. I'm looking at Always Mining. Again, these are horses who have won races this year. They earned their spot in the Derby. They've earned their spot in these particular events. The War of Will, Always Mining, and a horse that I think a lot of people are not paying attention to is a horse called Another Twist of Fate. I had a chance to watch his run in the Sunland Derby two starts back, and he made a phenomenal rally to get second that day. He was a little bit flat last time out in the Lexington Stakes at Cleveland. That was on a track that didn't play particularly to his style. He got boxed in a little bit. I think Another Twist of Fate's another one you want to throw in. And I think you're going to get value on all three of these horses. So maybe a trifecta box, an exacta box, using Always Mining, Another Twist of Fate, Bourbon War, if you want to throw him in, and certainly War of Will. I would definitely use those four horses.
Do you take any stock in the fact that, for example, you mentioned War of Will. Well, War of Will has to come back 2 weeks later. Always Mining doesn't. Do you put any stock in that?
I would if it wasn't something they were already intending on doing. I think Mark Cassie was always intending on this. I don't think this was something that, we're going to prove ourselves. We're just going to shove this horse back in 2 weeks. Yeah. I don't think that was the intent. I think they had always planned on this if he'd run well, and I think there is this intent of look, we ran a really good race, and they were going to run a pretty good race. I thought if you scratch, if you just took out the running lines from the Louisiana Derby,
sure,
he was in good form going into that race, coming off victories in the Risen Star Stakes and the Lacombe Stakes earlier this year. So I think they were always intending on this. It wasn't just a last-minute decision. So I think for War of Will, the two-week return doesn't bother me.
Great point, Steve. It's great to hear you. Appreciate it so much.
Anytime, my friend. You guys take care.
Steve Borstein joining us from Fox Sports. We'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors. Talk about the NBA in the final half hour. About the draft lottery last night and a Warriors-Blazers game one last night that looked like it was a regular season game in February. I mean, the Warriors just dismantled them, and I don't know how tired, for example, Portland had to be after playing a game seven at altitude. But last night, they didn't match up well at all with Golden State. The lottery is interesting. It did not turn out in any way, shape, or form like we thought it would. Shane Young, the NBA writer for ClutchPoints.com, will join us in the final half hour to talk about all this and more. It's also something that's very interesting. The NCAA has put a committee together headed up by Val Ackerman of the Big East and Gene Smith, the athletic director at Ohio State. And they're going to look at, is it possible in any way, shape, or form to use the Olympic model, I guess for the lack of a better term, where a student athlete can capitalize on their likeness, and how can they do that? Is it a trust fund? Is it a how do you go about doing this? How do you eliminate, for example, Matt Cotrillo is put together a company in Nashville, Tennessee. And he's competing essentially with Microsoft. And he decides, and he's a big Lipscomb basketball booster. What's to prevent Matt Cotrillo from quietly saying to a Lipscomb recruit, for example, hey, you come here for $100,000, and the guy comes there, and all of a sudden he's in commercials and ads and things like that, and he's getting $100,000, and you don't really care if he's helping your company, that's great, but you just did it to get the dude there. How do you weed through that? There's a lot of different elements to this. The number of athletes on campus, to be honest with you, that can capitalize on their likeness, I think is rather small, especially when you look at places. Let's take USC. Well, at USC, you're in Los Angeles, which means you've got the Rams, the Chargers, the Lakers, the Clippers, the Kings, the Dodgers, the Angels, the Ducks, and a few stars down the street in Hollywood. Exactly what are your opportunities to capitalizing your likeness? Now, I'll tell you one thing, one area where football and men's basketball players would be able to capitalize on their likeness. This would open the door for EA Sports to bring back the video game. See, now the suit would love that. The suit loved that game. He loved that game. Well, this would open the door for that game to return if this kind of legislation went through. But they're going to take a long, hard look at it, and there are a lot of unintended consequences that they have to weed through.
You've heard of bumper stickers, window stickers, even pot stickers. But none of those can save you money on your next new Kia. It's the Summer Sticker Sales Event at Sunbury Motors Kia. Look for a sticker and save. I wanna see ya in a Kia. Sunbury Motors Kia. During the Summer Sticker Sales Event, get 0% APR financing for 66 months and up to $2,000 additional cash on specially marked 2019 models. Sunbury Motors Kia has a 2019 Kia Sportage LX, now just $22,999.
Save nearly $4,000.
A 2019 Kia Sorento LX, priced at $23,999.
Save over $5,000.
Or lease a 2019 Kia Forte LXS for just $199.82 a month for only 24 months. And all Kias come with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Heading through KMF, lease term 24 months, 10,000 miles per year, $2,300 total due signing. Tax and tax action, offer expires 7/119. Warranty is limited powertrain. Warranty for details to retailer, go to Kia.com.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Very pleased bringing in Shane Young, NBA writer, ClutchPoints.com. Shane, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Oh, it's great to be back. How you doing, man?
It's great. It's great to have you. Doing very well. Start with the draft lottery. I think, despite all the people that went to St. Patrick's Cathedral the last couple of days lighting candles for the Knicks, and they ended up with the third pick, and maybe members of Zion Williamson's family felt that they really wanted to go to the Knicks. How entertaining was how that played out?
I think it was the most fascinating draft lottery I've ever seen, just because, as you know, like the league really does want these top tier prospects in the big markets around the league, right? So to see LA and New York picking fourth and third respectively, it's pretty hilarious considering the Grizzlies and Pelicans are going to take the top two slots, assuming no trades happen. And the fact that we go from having one of the best and most generational big men in league history, Anthony Davis, being probably on his way out, and then another one coming in Zion Williamson. So it was pretty awesome to see small markets win out yesterday, contrary to what a lot of people thought was going to happen with the Lakers jumping into the top four and possibly stealing it, or New York, that being their dream that they've had for years.
Yeah, for anybody who thinks that the Knicks can pull off a trade and can get Zion Williamson, they don't have anything to offer. Which is one of the reasons why they had a 14% chance of getting this pick. They didn't have anything to offer. So here's my question to you. Ken, in your opinion, is any door open for the Pelicans to have Davis and Williamson work together, maybe with a Drew Holiday?
That would be what I really want to see, but I don't think that Rich Paul and Anthony Davis, Rich Paul is an agent, I don't think that that's something that they're going to be particularly interested in, just because Zion's, 19 years old? And if Anthony Davis is in the very, very prime of his career, and Drew Holiday has a year left on his deal, or a couple of years left, one of the two, I don't know if that's something that he's willing to consider, because he wants to win now, and he wants to be with a team that is able to go to the playoffs and consistently. And I think New Orleans would be a playoff team with that core, of course, but I don't think they would be, you know, a second round or West Finals contender. So, you know, Davis, for his best interest in terms of his goal, his mindset, is to win games and to win championships. I don't think anything's changed on his part. And I think that something came out yesterday, a report about how still nothing has changed. That was from The Athletic. And I just feel like that Davis is not going to want to be patient, even though Zion is probably going to be the best prospect of the last, decade plus, two decades. It's just not something that helps him in his process right now at age, 26, 27.
Zion is not Boogie Cousins. They do have different games, but it was still big man working with big man. How well did Davis and Cousins work in the limited time they had together?
Oh, it worked. It was starting to work really well, because if you remember, whenever Boogie first got there, there were some spacing concerns, but there still were spacing issues because they didn't have the shooting to adequately play those guys together down the stretch. And but they had to because they're so talented, and they ended up winning games. But what a lot of people forgot is that when Boogie left, or got hurt, I should say, Nikola Mirotic came in, and they were basically just an incredible offense after that point because they were letting a lot of threes fly. Davis was getting a lot of rebounds, and they were pushing the break as fast as they possibly could. And that was when Rajon Rondo was on the team too, but still. So I think that Davis and Boogie was a cool experiment to see, but Zion and Davis might be just a little bit more fun to watch because of how high flying it would be if there's no trade for AD. And you know, if you're the Pelicans, you're in no rush, really, right? I mean, you could
you could
theoretically try to keep them together and try to convince AD to stay because he's not a free agent until next year.
What kind of pressure does this put the Knicks now for free agency?
A lot of pressure, because if you're James Dolan going on, you know, national radio shows and television shows saying that you're very confident that things are going to work out for you, as any owner would be confident, I would guess. But still, it hasn't worked out in a long time. It has not worked out for him in terms of free agency or drafting or anything of the kind. So I think the pressure to get Kyrie and KD is incredibly high now, because you end up looking like a fool if neither of them leave their team or if they go somewhere else together, because they just look at the dumpster fire that is New York so far and see that there's no really hope of winning there. So I think the pressure is high there, but it's not – I mean, it's tough to say it's the end of the world if neither KD or Kyrie come, because they haven't had a free agent for years and years and years. So really it's just back to the same old, same old.
Which brings me to the Lakers at four. Zion has a chance to be a transcendent player in the league. There aren't any other guys in this draft that are like that. The Lakers are picking four, and Shane, I get the same impression there. It's they'll add some talent, but it's same old, same old.
Exactly, and that has to be kind of a weird feeling for the Lakers, right? Because they did not envision being number four in this draft. There was some hope that they would win the lottery and hope that they would get that high, but the expectation was they were going to be much further down than that. And but the idea that the top four pick is nice, it's something to cheer about. Well, is it really? Because I'm not even a draft guy. I'm not sure if you are a college viewer or a prospect guy that studies these guys, but I don't know anyone that they could really be happy to get at number four. I think it's a three-player draft, and then there's a lot of hit-or-miss guys that could potentially be bust or they could be awesome,
right,
type of guys.
Right.
The way I would classify the draft after three is, if you remember Mikal Bridges being drafted last year by Philly and traded to Phoenix, I think that draft is full of a lot of guys like that, guys that are going to be good little role players but not – anything that's going to raise your ceiling as a team, probably. So, the Lakers have to feel kind of bummed that they got the positive outlook of a top-four pick, but it's not going to mean anything for the future.
Right, right, exactly. I'm watching the Warriors and the Blazers last night, and who knows how, you're playing Game 7 at altitude and so forth. I got all that. But it looked like a regular season game in January.
Yeah. Steve, I really just think that it is unfortunate that the league has to see that this is the conference finals. That actually, I kind of classified it yesterday, Portland and Golden State as a first-round series. That's no disrespect to Portland. I think Portland is awesome. I love their story. I love the fact that they can be swept last year as the three seed, rebound, come all the way back, face all these tough questions about, should we break up the backcourt? Should we trade Damian? Should we trade CJ? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, and then come back and win 50-plus again, get the three seed, and you're in the conference finals, the furthest they've been since 2001, right? So it is kind of just unfortunate that we have to see them get blitzed, but I think my take from last night is that Golden State didn't even play their A game, and they still won by 22. And I don't see any game being close. I don't see any game being within 15 points in the series. And that's without Kevin Durant, probably the deadliest scorer ever, which is it's actually just frustrating because the conference finals actually happened last round when Houston just completely collapsed in the fourth quarter.
If you're Golden State, you don't have to play Durant until Portland, as far as I'm concerned, until Portland breaks through and wins a game.
Yep, you just exactly said what I said yesterday, man. Like, if you're the Warriors and Rick Celebrini is the trainer, once he clears Kevin Durant, Steve Kerr should just have a heart-to-heart with KD and say, I know you want to play. I know this could be your last playoff run here, and I know you want to put your imprint on it, but what's the point? Why go out there and risk something, risk that your calf could be strained again or be aggravated again, whenever we have Milwaukee or Toronto up next, the toughest challenge they will face in this entire era? And I'm going to include, and this, people think I'm crazy, like, I'm going to include the 2016 Cavs in this statement. Like, even though that Cavs team won the title, this Bucks or Raptors team is just a better team. They're just going to be all over them defensively in the finals. So I think you rest KD, get them 110% for May 30th.
All right, Toronto gets Milwaukee. I don't know what it does for TV sets to have those two markets in there, but Kawhi and Giannis certainly are stars.
Yeah.
How do you break down that series? What become the swing factors in a series that could go a long way?
Gosh, man, like this series, I've been just thinking about the series all weekend, and you know, whenever I really did not want Philly to win that game, just for the sake of this, for the sake of us seeing the two best players in the East, the two best teams in the East, go at it head to head. And honestly, the starting lineups for both are just ridiculously talented, ridiculously efficient and aggressive defensively. But as for the series breaking down, I've kind of went back and forth here on, you know, with Bucks in seven or Raptors in six. And the reason I'm eventually just going to go with Toronto is because I think that this is the first time that Giannis is going to see that there's multiple guys to throw at him. There's more than one or two good options. There's a lot of good options. I mean, you know, Kawhi Leonard didn't defend him for the most part in the regular season series. That was Pascal Siakam. Siakam guarded him for about 70 possessions in the regular season games, which was, I believe, four of them. And he did pretty well on him. I mean, as well as you're going to get from anyone. And Al Horford is somebody that gave Giannis some trouble in some stretches, but Giannis figured that out against Boston. It's going to be a little bit more difficult to figure out when you have Kawhi, Pascal, and Marc Gasol is just a big body in the middle, stronger than Horford, bigger than Horford. Might not be as, you know, mobile as Horford, but I mean, I think that they're going to be able to contain the drives on Giannis, and that is something that no team has done yet. And I'm not saying Giannis is going to be shut down. I'm not saying that they're going to get blitzed off the court, but I just think Toronto has the scheme to get it done. And Kyle Lowry versus Eric Bledsoe is probably the most important matchup here, Steve, because, like, if Kyle is a no-show, which a lot of people believe he is in the playoffs, then they should probably be toast. But
Shane, you literally took the next question out of my mouth about Kyle Lowry, because to me, I think he ends up being, my opinion, Shane, the swing guy in the series. He shows they've got a shot. He doesn't show, they go.
Oh, exactly. If he's knocking, the numbers, I had them in front of me earlier. I think he's shooting 32%, 31% on open shots without anyone 4 feet in front of him. So that is a little bit frustrating if you're Toronto, because you're getting the looks that you want. They have gotten the looks they want all the time. They just can't knock them down. And if Lowry is open because Kawhi is garnering two guys or three guys on his drives, those shots have to fall. If they don't, the Raptors might go home in five games.
Exactly. I mean, exactly. You know what? I'll say this about Giannis. The Euro steps are really important to developing, I think, players getting plays at the bucket. Boy, Giannis is about as good as anybody as I've seen with the Euro step. What do you think?
Yes, because he covers, I think, 10 feet with two steps. It's actually just ridiculous. And the only person that I can really think of that was probably more deceptive with it was Dwayne Wade. I think Dwayne Wade and Manu Ginobili are experts at it, but and Harden does it so much that we kind of lost our we kind of lost our love for it because he just does it every single time whenever he's driving. But Giannis gets around four defenders. Like, I kind of joked with someone, if I was guarding Giannis, it would take a half a euro and he'd be at the rim by me in a second. It just wouldn't matter.
Well, I once went 10 feet on two steps once, but I tripped. All right, so... Hey, absolute pleasure. Great information as always, Shane. It's great to hear you again, my friend.
Oh, thanks, man. Have a good one, man.
You too. Thanks so much. Hey, we'll wrap things up in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right, great to have you with us on the show today. I think we've covered a lot of ground today. And for anybody out there who thought the NBA rigged the draft lottery last night, I don't think anybody's going to sit back and say it was rigged. It was when you start seeing, I remember when the Bulls pick arrived. I want to say it's 7. I look around, you got to be kidding me. Then Phoenix. It was. And then all of a sudden you get to the top four. Okay, you get the Lakers. I think there are a lot of fans out there like the Lakers. Then the Knicks. So people are like, okay, well, the Knicks are bad. So, I mean, you know, everybody's been saying that this is the moment. And then you saw Memphis and you saw New Orleans. And I kept thinking, this is kind of going to come down to Memphis and New Orleans the way this thing's going. And it did. Memphis has the second pick. All right, so TNT has the Raptors-Bucks tonight. And ESPN, of course, and then transitioning to ABC, will have the West Final, then the Finals themselves. Once again, two people that, to me, continue to really shine for ESPN are Mike Breen, whom I think is one of the best, period. And Doris Burke. And as you know, a few years ago, obviously, but I worked 5 or 6 games with Doris Burke. And I thought she was fantastic. She's also one of the easiest people to work with on the planet. But you know, I'm thrilled to see her success. One of these days, we'll get her on the show. And then TNT has this one tonight. And then there's a lot more coming. We won't have a show tomorrow because of the Phillies. And we're back on Friday. And we'll have Dick Girardi on talking about the Preakness on Friday. And then coming up on Monday, Tad Boyle, the head basketball coach at Colorado. You're saying, you're having the Colorado basketball coach on the show? Really? Except Tad Boyle is the head of the Rules Committee. And on June 5th, I expect their recommendations about moving the three-point line back, about offensive rebounds, recycling to 20 instead of 30 on the shot clock, and a couple of other points will be ratified June 5th. So I want Tad Boyle on, since he's the head of the Rules Committee. And look, he brings, this is the perspective you need when you're on the Rules Committee. It's very important to have people on the Rules Committee like a Tad Boyle. Dave Gavitt was a big believer. My good friend Tom McGrath was pointing this out to me because the last time I talked to Tad Boyle was 3 years ago in Las Vegas. And he's smart and just a genuinely good guy and a really good basketball coach. But Tom pointed out to me, and Tom knows Tad Boyle very well, but I also knew Dave Gavitt really well. And he said, it's great that he's on the Rules Committee. Dave Gavitt often said how important it is to have a player coach leading the rules, and Tad Boyle's that kind of guy. He played and he also coached. He says, if you have an official doing it, it changes the game, but not always for the best way. Tad Boyle brings that perspective to the table. It'll be great to hear him on Monday.